miles of black ribbon on the lone highway. Men turn into boys on the lone highway. Rest up creeps and die on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. On the lone highway. Honey, on the lone highway. Left me for another on the lone highway. They killed Dirty Dog McGee on the lone highway. Stroked a little girl's hair on the lone highway. On the lone highway. On the lone highway.
Hello and welcome to Operation Scorpio. Today's date is Saturday, February 6, 2021. And welcome to the free-range open-air insane asylum we call Earth. Well, guys, here we are, living in a land of illusion. Living in a land of illusion with a fake election, a fake president, a fake pandemic, fake everything, and a fake storming of the Capitol. And guys, we really are living in a time where our controllers are simply constructing a false reality around us, and false and scripted events are part of our everyday lives, and of course we're supposed to react to them emotionally and then let these events shape our consciousness and shape the very foundations of our lives. And it's becoming clear to me that this game of essentially, you know, shaping a false reality, this game has been played a lot longer than any of us thought, a lot longer, for hundreds of years at least. And, you know, as Mike Gatti's research, The Rebel Madman, as his research has shown, the events, you know, around the founding of America and the Constitution aren't even close to what we've been told. And many events surrounding early American history, many of these events were actually pre-constructed, fabricated events where they used the media to gin up either hatred or passion of some kind amongst the populace to get them to react in the way that the controllers wanted, to whip up emotions. That's the game, isn't it? Only today, our controllers have much better technology to work with than they've ever had. So I've been thinking, how much longer do we keep playing this game? How much longer do we play this game? And how far back in history does this game go where, you know, an elite, a parasitical elite group of people have the power and ability to construct false realities for us to live in? And then use those realities to change the world. You know, how deep does that rabbit hole go? That's something to really think about. I don't know how far back this goes, but I really do believe it's much further back than any of us could have possibly imagined. And now, guys, we have a president who is promising. He's promising to give a mask to every American. Yeah, not a chicken in every pot and a car in every garage. That was the campaign promise of Herbert Hoover back many years ago. But no, now a mask for every American promised by Joey the Groper. Yeah. And man, what a criminal family this guy runs. Oh, all these politicians are criminals now. They're all in a cabal. And I just read a headline earlier that old Hunter just moved into a $5-point-something million house somewhere in California, living the good life, smoking those rocks. Oh, man. Yeah, a mask for every American. And of course, almost all these masks are made in China. Made in China. The gloves are made in China. And I'm pretty certain almost all of this so-called PPE, personal protection equipment, is made in China. Made in China, guys. Looks like China's the big winner in this whole game. And if I didn't know better, I'd think that the scales were being tipped. Were being tipped in favor of China by some very powerful and covert forces to hand over the new reins of power to China. And guys, this really isn't communism. It's far beyond communism. I know that that's a popular buzzword, but what they're trying to hoist upon us is far beyond communism. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, man, I've been looking a little deeper into this storming of the Capitol now that they have this hyper-emotional ceremony for Officer Brian Sicknick, who they're calling a fallen hero. And this is about the phoniest media concoction I think I've ever seen. I'll tell you what, man, it's they're getting sloppy. And part of the problem is too many people have cell phones, and there's so much footage that pops up that they really didn't intend for people to see. Like the cops opening up the gates and letting people in. Just imagine if everyone had a cell phone back during 9/11 in 2001. Imagine all of the, let's say, anomalies that would have been put on video and put on the internet. Yeah. So that's another unintended consequence of the surveillance society they're putting us under. They are under surveillance too. And it's making it a little more difficult to pull off some of these operations. So anyway, you know, the reason this storming of the Capitol caught my mind again or my attention is that, you know, they had this ceremony where, you know, Officer Brian Sicknick was laid in honor at the Capitol Rotunda, just like Ruth Bader Ginsburg was, you know. And of course, Joey the Groper and Dr. Jill were there paying their respects, both dutifully wearing their masks, of course. Everyone there was, needless to say, 6 feet apart. That's part of the ritual now, isn't it? Oh, yeah, it's a ritual. Yeah, and so this is the first time ever that a Capitol police officer has been laid in honor at the Rotunda, the Capitol Rotunda. And this whole ceremony was so hyper-emotional, man. You know, they really overdid it. You know, when they were, they had the, you know, his, the urn of his ashes, and then the American flag and the folded up into a triangle. And, you know, they had the guards come up, you know, with their little march and, you know, all walking, you know, like robots. And then they set down the urn, and then they did, you know, one of these salutes, but they did it real slow, like this, you know, real slow to make it extra emotional, extra important. A fallen hero. And I'm not trying to, you know, degrade someone's death. I think the guy probably died, but guess what? You know, the whole story we are being told surrounding these events is completely false. You know, and just the pomp and ceremony of this ritual was just off the charts. It really was off the charts. You know, they had this hearse, this, you know, brand new fancy black hearse pull up in front of the building. And then they had some military guy, you know, pull out the urn very slowly and ceremoniously. You know, they should have had a coffin. It would have been a, you know, better visuals for the scripted event here. But they pulled out this urn, which looked kind of silly, you know, this tiny urn coming out of this big hearse. And then these two guards, you know, they walked up the stairs, you know, one step at a time, and then they'd stop and pause, and then take another step in unison, right? Like robots. And, you know, they made their way up all the steps. It's probably 33 steps up into that building. I've never counted it. I wouldn't be surprised, though. And, yeah, then they get inside there with the urn, and there's, you know, Chuck U. Schumer and Nancy Pelosi in the front row getting their FaceTime on the news. And, you know, Pelosi gave this speech that was just disgusting. And, you know, she was talking about the fallen heroes who died protecting our democracy and protecting Congress. And she used the term, here we are in this temple of democracy. I mean, these people are completely out of touch. Completely out of touch. And you'd think that this officer, Sicknick, died like, you know, throwing himself on top of a hand grenade that was about to explode, you know, saving, you know, a whole bunch of innocent children. That's the level of emotionality they brought it to. And, you know, of course, the hidden message behind this whole ceremony was, look at how awful these Americans are that dared to step foot in our building, our temple of democracy. That was the hidden message. Look how dangerous Americans are who don't want to do as they're told. That was the underlying message behind this whole ceremony. Yeah. And as I watched this procession, this ceremony, this ritual, I was really struck by how self-important and grandiose the whole thing was. You know, here they are inside this rotunda building, and it's like a castle or a palace, you know, 100-foot high ceiling in there, maybe higher. And what struck me is this disconnect between people in the government and the average citizen, the average person, the disconnect between these people and Americans is growing. And, you know, this chasm between the two worlds that government officials live in and the average American, the chasm is just growing daily. And these people are so blind, they don't see it. They don't see how disgusting they look from the outside looking in. And I think this is one reason why they always want to keep this narrative going about how, oh, there's inequality between blacks and whites and men and women, and the there's not enough vaccines for everybody, and you know, there's systemic racism. And I think part of the reason we're hearing this chant and this cry constantly is they don't want people to see the different world that they live in. They want you to externalize it and fight amongst yourself for the table scraps while these people have time to run ceremonies that are so fancy and over the top. You know, it really is, like I said earlier on a previous show, a let them eat cake moment. Yeah. Let the peasants fight amongst themselves while we rule in our temple of democracy. These people are drunk on power, and they're becoming more hateable by the day, and they don't see it. They don't see it, and it's only going to get worse. You know, what a self-congratulatory ceremony this whole thing was. You know, keeping these phony narratives going while the people within the government essentially dismantle the country. And there they are patting themselves on the back and praising themselves for their wonderful actions. And then outside of the Capitol Rotunda, there was 400 or 500 Capitol police officers just standing there in formation, you know, like robots. And I, you know, they didn't make the grade to get to go inside the building with the leaders, the rulers. They didn't make the grade. They were standing there doing nothing. And I thought to myself, well, wait a minute. You know, I thought we're under this great emergency. And they must have had at least half of the Capitol Police. I don't know how many Capitol Police there are, but there was 400 or 500 guys just standing there doing nothing. So I thought we had this emergency where, you know, we have to have 5,000 National Guard troops, you know, guarding the Capitol because of this threat, these awful Americans that stormed the Capitol building. And then, you know, just to make it more grandiose and out of touch with reality, there was a parade of, oh, I'd say at least 100 motorcycle cops, all in their fancy, you know, uniforms, brand new motorcycles with their little lights flashing, you know, basically doing nothing. I guess all the criminals took a break. And so they just rode around on their motorcycles just to really make it a fancy show. And then, of course, they had the Scottish Rite bagpipes playing Amazing Grace, as they always do. What ceremony would be complete without that? Just a little reminder that, hey, Scottish Rite, you know, the Supreme Council building is just down the street here. Just a reminder. So we'll play the Scottish bagpipes for you. And then as the whole thing wound down, you know, they walked down the steps one step at a time and then pausing, you know, very, very somber. And, you know, then I saw in the background there was Mitch McConnell standing in between Nancy Pelosi and Chucky Baby, Chuck U. Schumer, you know, just kind of shooting the breeze, shooting the shit. And it's very clear these people are friends. These people are friends. It's all just a big show because they all follow orders. These people are nothing more than salesmen and actors. They're not politicians. They're salesmen, actors, and criminals. But I was just struck by the self-importance of these people as they have their little ceremony congratulating themselves and essentially giving the old, you know, up yours to the American people. You know, how dare you enter our temple? But then here, on another level, guys, there is a lot of loose ends with this Brian Sisnick narrative. And, of course, the official story is that Brian Sisnick was hit over the head with a fire extinguisher by one of these rowdy, awful Americans, the hoi polloi, the unwashed masses that stormed the palace, Capitol building. But it turns out that, first of all, there's no witnesses or any footage of him being hit over the head with a fire extinguisher. And it allegedly happened inside the building. And of course, you know, every square inch of that building is covered by a camera. So if it happened, there'd be footage and you would have seen it 100 times already on the news. But as it turns out, there is no footage and the whole narrative is starting to fall apart. But of course, it's not being reported. But if you just take the little puzzle pieces that they, you know, the little scraps they throw to you from the mainstream media, it's clear the whole narrative's falling apart. But they won't put the puzzle together for you, of course, because they've got to keep the narrative going at all costs. So now they're changing the story. Well, it looks like one of the protesters threw a fire extinguisher and it hit Officer Sicknick on the head. Oh, okay. So someone just, hey, I think I'll just throw a fire extinguisher and see what happens. And again, there's no proof, no witnesses, no nothing. And the only sources for this information are two unnamed anonymous government officials. Yeah, that's believable, huh? And, you know, even if someone did throw a fire extinguisher, you know, getting hit on the head with a fire extinguisher, that would hurt like a son of a bitch, no doubt about it. But that is not going to kill a 42-year-old man in good health. Not going to happen. And here's the thing. If you dig through the stories, the government has not given an official cause of death. These stories of the fire extinguisher were simply anonymous sources, like they always like to do now. That way it can't be verified. Unnamed anonymous government officials, but the government has not officially released any information on his death. Nada. No cause of death. And here's the thing. If you actually look into it a little deeper, it turns out that this Sicknick character, and they're admitting this in the mainstream media very quietly, what happened is that he returned to his office after the so-called riots, right? I didn't know that Capitol police officers had their own office, but apparently this guy did. So he goes back to his office, and 2 hours after he returns to his office, he collapses in his chair at his desk. Okay. And then supposedly he was revived by CPR, and then they took him to the hospital, and the following day, he has a stroke and they put him on a ventilator. Of course, they got to put him on a ventilator. That's the in thing to do now. Put somebody on a ventilator if they have any physical health problems. Let's see what happens. So it turns out this guy dies the day after the event. Okay. And I think most people, the average person that hears these stories, they assume that he was killed at the Capitol building during the riot. And no, he died in his office, supposedly, or in a hospital after having, you know, some kind of problem. And now they're actually admitting that he may have had some kind of underlying health problem, undisclosed. They won't say what it was. And then, of course, on January 8th, Nancy Pelosi ordered that all flags be lowered to half-mast. What a load of crap. And then Chuck U. Schumer signed the order to have him lay in honor at the Capitol Rotunda. So the whole narrative is falling apart of this entire event, only it's not being, you know, discussed much. They just keep showing the footage of all these awful people going in the building. Yeah. They're not even telling you what injuries he may have suffered. No statement has been made officially. And why is that? Is it classified? Well, this whole narrative is completely falling apart. It's just amazing. And, you know, without Sick Nick's death, this is no longer a deadly assault on the Capitol, is it? It's just a bunch of people that were let in by the police, a lot of misguided people that really got into a situation that they didn't know they were getting involved in. And they took a self-guided tour of the Capitol, threw some papers on the floor, took a bunch of selfies of themselves. And one guy put his feet up on Nancy Pelosi's desk. It's really a big nothing burger. And you can see how they use these phony events to create the need for more security, more guys with machine guns on the streets. And supposedly this, you know, Ashley Babbitt woman was killed by an unnamed federal officer. His name has not been released. I'm not certain she was killed. Maybe she was, maybe she wasn't. I have questions about that, but I'm not going to say for sure I know either way. But what we're really left with here is that some woman, according to the story, was shot in the head or in the neck by some cop in a situation where she certainly should not have been killed. So this whole thing just collapses like a house of cards. It's amazing. And now the glorious FBI, the heroes in the FBI have rounded up, you know, and arrested 135 people. And 400 suspects have been identified and may be arrested in the future. Yeah, PL2451 in the chat saying they were led into a trap just like Charlottesville. Absolutely. It's the same game being played over and over and over. And that's what made me ask the question, how long do we play this game? And, you know, whose bright idea was it in Charlottesville to have, you know, this nighttime tiki torch march just so they could invoke the imagery of Nazi Germany for the media? You know, that was a setup too, man. Playing right into their hands on purpose. So yeah, they've arrested 135 people, 400 suspects. And, you know, all they're doing is tracking people's cell phones. Pretty easy. Especially all these people that put the posts up on their social media pages. It doesn't exactly take Sherlock Holmes to figure out that mystery, does it? But what's interesting, man, is, you know, they've got all these clips on YouTube of the arrest of these poor souls, you know, and ruining people's lives. You know, people who were just suckered into going along with this play. And, you know, as it turns out, they're trying to make it a big deal. Oh, these are terrorists. Well, most of these people are being charged with unlawfully entering a federal building. Is that the act of a terrorist? That's pretty sad. You do not have the right to enter a federal building without permission, citizen. Yeah, and then, you know, they're broadcasting these people's names. You know, I watched a bunch of these clips from the local news around the country of the different areas these people were from. They're broadcasting their names. If they owned a business, they're saying, oh, so-and-so who owned such-and-such flower company or was a real estate agent at such-and-such company, just making sure that these people's lives are ruined and that they inflict the maximum damage on these people's lives and to create, you know, an atmosphere of fear, right? Just amazing. And some girl in her 20s, I don't remember her name, doesn't really matter. This young girl supposedly took Nancy Pelosi's laptop from her office and then tried to sell it to Russian spies, guys. Can you imagine? Ooh, that's pretty scary, huh? And, you know, let's look at that story. How absurd is that? So let's just say it's true. This 20-year-old girl, oh, here's Nancy Pelosi's laptop. I'm going to take it. And then hey, I think I'll sell it to some Russian spies, you know. So what, she calls up the Russian embassy, you know, beep, beep, boop, beep, beep, boop. Yes, I've recently come in possession of Nancy Pelosi's laptop, and I'd like to speak to a Russian spy, please. If you could, I want to try to find out how much this laptop might be worth, and I just kind of shopping it around, and I thought Russian spies would be a good place to start, so I'll just stay on hold until you can bring one to me. I mean, how absurd is this, man? And, as you know, this girl, if this story's true, I don't know if it is, you can't believe a damn thing these people say. Supposedly, she's facing up to 30 years in jail for theft of government property. Ooh. And supposedly, they let her out of jail, but she can't use the internet. She's back at home with her mother, this dangerous criminal. And thank God she can't use the internet. Just imagine what kind of dastardly deeds this young girl might do if she had access to the internet. And of course, many of, you know, the patriots that are being fed this secret intel by these charlatans that claim to have all these secret sources. The Navy SEALs took the laptops, and they're at a secret location at an underground bunker, and they're going to use the information to make the mass arrest that we've been promising for the last 4 years. But this time it's real. It's really going to happen. Man. How many times are we going to get played by the same old games? Yeah, so this whole narrative is just falling apart like a cheap sweater. And if when you distill it all down, what are you left with? Well, pretty much nothing. A big nothing burger. A totally fake event where really basically nothing happened other than some people took a self-guided tour of the Capitol. People who were tricked by government Judas goats and then were led to the slaughter. Yeah. What I see is they're sleepwalking us into a militarized government. That's what they're doing. And they're going to do it gradually. They have to. They have to do it slowly so people don't see what the game is. But meanwhile, you know, so many patriot types are being played into thinking that, well, the military is about to take over and restore the Constitution. Man, just being played. Just being played. But meanwhile, in vaccine news, 10,000 more National Guard troops are going to build new vaccination centers or use existing facilities like football stadiums. Can't have those anymore. Let's turn the football stadiums into vaccination centers. So 10,000 more National Guard members are being activated to 100 new locations to give out vaccines. And as I pointed out before, we're seeing the military brought into civilian life more and more, you know, handing out food at food banks, building field hospitals, assisting at hospitals, going to the airports. Oh, we're here to ask about your COVID status. Oh, man. Yeah, yeah. And one other little thing that caught my eye before I in my rant here is that, you know, we've all heard about the Keystone Pipeline being shut down. Well, you know, it turns out that they're using a railroad to ship that oil now that the, you know, the pipeline is defunct. And of course, the railroad is owned by Warren Buffett. And old Warren donated something like $58 million towards the Biden campaign and the DNC. So another day at the office, guys. Another day at the office. I just hope that people see the game and we stop playing this same old game over and over and over, falling for the same old tricks. Time for a new reality, guys. And I don't think the military is going to create it for us. That said, I would like to bring on my co-host and my main man, Mr. Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Giuseppe, how are you, sir?
Hey, Scorpio, great intro. I'm fine. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing okay, man. Doing okay. And we've got Mr. Chris Weiner, a.k.a. Brutal Honesty. Chris, how you doing, man?
I'm on mute. Doing all right, man. How about yourself? Great intro, Dave.
Okay, thank you. Well, what are your guys' thoughts on how this whole narrative of our fallen hero, Officer Sisnick, it's just falling apart. It's unraveling like a cheap sweater. What's your guys' reaction, and where do you think this takes us?
Same place as always. It's the London Theater. Go to work on the minds and hearts, minds, and souls of the people, and using perception and perception management as a means to try to deliver in these abnormal social norms that they're trying to make regular and incorporate into our everyday life, we'll say. So it's kind of a bargaining tactic where they take away just about everything you have, and then when they give back a sliver, they look like noble, righteous philanthropists instead of, you know, petty thieving scoundrels. So I think it's something they've always done in terms of these things, and have always taken more than things that were never theirs. And that's why we're, like I said, mortgaging our own homeland from these trespassers.
Right. Giuseppe, what's your reaction to this, that the guy didn't even die the day of the riots? He died the following day. There's no proof any of this happened. And you know how they're always saying that there's five people were killed? Well, apparently the other three people they're claiming, other than, you know, Bobbitt, who was shot by a federal officer, supposedly, I'm not even sure if that's true. It might be. But the other three people, they're claiming died. One had a heart attack. One had a stroke. And the third lady just collapsed for some reason and died. So what are we left with, Giuseppe?
Well, what's astounding to me is the level of arrogance that the globalist mind rapists have to do all these absurd, specious lies, and then they do their parade of the empire like they did for the traitor John McCain, for the Talmudic traitor Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and now for this cop who supposedly, you know, died. And they just, you factor that in with the insane lies about masks and vaccines, and literally they're so arrogant, and they believe that the mouth-breathing sheeple are so hypnotized, so entrained, that they'll believe anything. And so they just go about their business creating these theaters of absurdity, and they're like, oh, this will work. It always works, and so far it does.
Yeah.
I have to point out that this is like the bloodline that has basically upheld and imposed feudalism for thousands of years and many things before that. So nothing has changed other than the technocracy by which they can accomplish these objectives and really the efficiency by which they're doing it. And at this point in time, they're finding themselves in a pinnacle of a situation where human labor is no longer relevant in terms of their objectives. You know, it's not a prominent factor in terms of military force or even production of goods. So arguably speaking, they're trying to do away with it, supply and demand. And it really is indicative of their historic contempt and the knowledge of these things, not only in the elaborate ruse of the London Theater Company and these false flags, but just this whole sinister cold calculation, cruelty, hierarchy model they have on us. It's what they've studied and researched and perfected over thousands and thousands of years of torturing the human condition and imposing the misery index upon us, and really using this as a mechanism where we really imprison ourselves by our own imaginations, our own perceptions, in many cases allow these things to continue as like some sort of tradition or custom, or, you know, even when it gets called out, they rebrand it as a revolution. And I think that's kind of what they're trying to do, even with this Q thing, is to create enough of a populist movement to point out the obvious things that they're ascertaining from the people through internet consensus, like Cambridge Analytics or things of the sort, and to really cater to these people and tell us what they think we want to hear, in the really to filibuster our outrage, to keep us waiting, to really allow our outrage to be directed by their puppet masters and their circus ring, three ring circus leaders or things like this. So this is really the point of it. It's how they've always gotten away with this. And it's just, like I said, a new generation they're going to work. And this generation's like running around saying, oh, we need to go into crypto and things like this to get out of this. And I'm just going, wow, you know, I guess they don't really see the forest through the trees yet. Or maybe they're putting a lot of Judas goats in the midst to really try to send these let's say, doom concepts out into the forefront and make those the opposition to this resistance or for this resistance, I should say.
Did either of you guys see that the hero of the Defense Intelligence Agency, Michael Flynn, came out yesterday in an interview with the right side with Doug Billings, and he said there is no plan. Trump never signed the Insurrection Act. I mean, it's just – and then, I don't know, did you catch that in concert with yesterday an article by Sean at SGD Report? Pentagon blog warns that freedom leads to populism, which undermines national security. So essentially, you've got the internationalist Jew-controlled military-industrial complex having some little puppet with a fist up his rear end, marionette, coming out and saying, we can't trust our citizens to be free. Can you believe that? I mean, it's just getting more absurd.
Well, that's amazing. That's amazing, Giuseppe. I hadn't heard that, but it all fits together, doesn't it? And at least they're being honest. They're saying, hey, man, this freedom's no good. We got to do away with it. It's interfering with our plans. And I think these people are so drunk on power, they don't see how disgusting their behavior is and how hated they're going to become by the average person.
Well, I think they're saying, what can we do to stop it? And they think that they're going to keep people in prison by their own minds and this tradition of cruelty that they've always used to corrupt the political system. They've done this by different means in every point in time throughout history. If you truly look at it, you know, with a large going down the rabbit hole, let's just say a lot of these things have been just repetitions of the same control opposition offering all along. And in many cases, I think that we never really won the Revolutionary War and that these agents of London have been selling us out for a long, long time and using law and the illusion of independence to do so. Look at any colony they've ever controlled. They supposedly lend the illusion of them being the underdog, the persecuted, just kind of like they're doing with the Trump narrative, like they did with the Jews in World War II, where the guys that are the money behind this whole oppression and transition into the new reset are the ones that are proclaiming to be the victims. You know, it reminds me of, if you've ever seen Silicon Valley, there's a clip in there where Gavin Belson talks about the billionaire Holocaust. And man, if you get a chance to get on YouTube, I can't get on there anymore. I'd share it with you guys, but you should check that out because it's pretty interesting. It's pretty funny. A lot of parallels they put into this persecution that fall into this Trump narrative, and like Cambridge Analytics putting out Trump in the first place, along with the Brexit and many other things, and of course, the Q, I think, PSYOP is probably somehow related to this as well, and using these metrics to really tell people what they want to hear. The stuff we already know, they come through and get their credibility by repeating it back to us and then steer you down to these certain doom capacity avenues that you're seeing, where you end up losing time, 4 years or whatever, and while these guys are stealing everything that's not nailed down, you know?
Well, and look how they've deactivated and sort of kept, you know, so many people sitting on their hands just waiting for the military to come in and Trump to come in on a white stallion to save us all. And the narrative continues today. I'm just astounded by it.
If you take a look with that knowledge in mind, you can see the actual reason why the internationalist Jew, the Satanists, have gone so in to try and lock down the world with this quaccination. It's not even, it's an injection of genetically modified technology and with these creating this great reset, because they thought the internet could be this amazing mind rape tool, and instead it turned out to be an amazing information sharing tool for the proles, right? And so they don't like so many people are, you know, the thousands or tens of thousands or however many are listening to this worldwide and listen to Sean Surplus and Maleficus and listen to The Fetch and listen to all the other courageous truth tellers. So they don't like it. And I think that you factor that all in and all of a sudden you see why did they go all in like the ESPN late night poker tournaments.
Well, and you know, one thing that's interesting is the reason that they're targeting conspiracy theorists now with these phony narratives to put people down these various rabbit holes is that they've realized that more and more people are not buying the official narrative. So in a way, they're acknowledging that more and more people are sort of spinning out of control, and they've got to find a new way to control their minds. So they're making up all these fantasies that are very appealing to people. And I'm convinced that pretty soon more and more of these people that are caught up in these fantasies, the Q and all this stuff, they're going to realize they've been played, and they're going to look for other information. And this whole thing's going to backfire on the controllers eventually.
No doubt. There's definitely this overreach, and they're going to reach around and slap themselves in the face with it. So, yeah, I think that the tighter they squeeze, the more it's going to slip through their fingers as usual. And this is something the Force ain't going to get their way out of. I think that really they're going to have to level with humanity at some point, or they're going to have to exterminate everybody that is telling the truth. And that seems to be the option they're going with. If you look at what they're doing with Marjorie Taylor Greene, or even like deeming the conspiracy theorist as the biggest threat to national security, the white nationalists, things like this. This has been a eugenics program against the white man. And really, they're trying to use the minorities that have also been suffered into the system of oppression against the caste system from within. And really, the people that have caused this whole misery index and this caste system in the first place, socioeconomically and with social engineering, are absolved and above suspicion from any sort of accountability in this measure. These are the guys that literally sit around and think about how much money you should get paid an hour. This is why wages don't really deviate in terms of trade craft around the world. You know, this is why these guys really put you down these intellectual cul-de-sacs with the educational institutions and turn you into systems managers, where you're just smart enough to do the job they're asking you to do, but really not smart enough to understand who you're doing it for. So this is something that's really important to point out.
Yeah. They're saying that we're getting some echo going here now. Chris, do you possibly have some earphones or something you could use? Or?
Yeah, man. I don't know why every time on your show it does this. I never have to do this otherwise. But
I don't understand it.
I'll be a sport and play along.
But I appreciate all the people in the chat, man. There's so many good comments rolling through there. It's great to be joined by so many insightful people.
So you have to check it out.
Yeah, that sounds better. And then I just want to throw this at you guys and see what you guys think. You know how some of the patriot types that are caught up in these fantasies about the military is going to arrest everybody, the sealed indictments are being opened, it's all real this time. They're citing the events that happened in Myanmar, right, where there was a military coup. They ousted they said the election was no good, and the military is taking over. And some of these people that bought into this narrative are saying, this is proof. This is going to happen in the States too. And I just learned an interesting little fact about this. Literally days before this military coup happened in Myanmar, received a $350 million loan from the International Monetary Fund. So I just wanted to throw that at you guys and see what you thought about that.
Funny how that works, isn't it, Dave?
That the level of malevolent, sinister machinations that come from the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the Bank of International Settlements, all the entities that the Rothschild operatives use to control the world. If you start looking into that, they are brutal. I mean, it's the classic thing. We want to give you a loan. We want you to be part of the world community. Here you go. We won't step in and involve ourselves in the internal operations of your country. No, we'd never do that. We respect national sovereignty. Yeah, right.
Well, isn't that interesting timing, though, that we don't even know what happened in Myanmar yet. All these people say, this is proof that Trump is going to save the country with the military. You know, it doesn't even make any sense. And just by chance, they got a $350 million loan from the IMF. It's just amazing. Yeah. Let me throw one other bit of news at you guys from in other IMF news. This is great, man. The IMF has a research council who all the guys on it are Jews, incidentally, just by coincidence.
No way.
Yeah.
Really?
No cost for one. And they're saying that in the future, they want people's credit score to be tied to their internet browsing history. Your thoughts, gentlemen?
I think that that kind of speaks for itself. I don't think you really need to think more about that. But I have to say that really this has always been, and Giuseppe, you almost said the international Jew, didn't you, when you were saying the internationalist banker, right?
I almost did, but somebody pointed out the other day, Paul from California's older brother said I say Satanist too much, so I'm trying to expand my extremely limited vocabulary.
But we'll say the internationalist Jew is an excellent word to use for this cabal that is really doing this. And they do seem to all maintain and uphold in their own private ranks this bloodline that ties back to this. So, you know, it's funny how they often use these type of instruments like the Vatican, and they really are the ones that ran the exchequers and the infrastructure program and the cultural programming that goes along with the Vatican and most of its business models, just as they've done with the counter-reformations against it or anything like that. These guys don't leave much to chance. They control both options. And if you ever look at every war in history, it's why the same families on each side of it and at the leadership of it. And of course, certainly not so much in the casualty end of it. So it's kind of funny how these guys lead from behind and really send, you know, the fighting age male population into certain doom. And I was looking into, we're going to get into my show a little bit about Hitler and some of his origins. And we're going to tear this apart pretty good, because you're going to see this is a British puppet that's been put in all along. And this is the London Theater Company putting this on people, and of course creating very, very, very much real carnage with this, and taking a big amount of control in every step of the way of these mass eugenic purges that they're really doing every 50 years for a long time back now.
You know, I'd like to interject briefly that 350 billion to Miramar. They also offered 800 or maybe that was million. Either way, the point is a few months ago, they offered 800 million or billion to Belarus to get with the global mask agenda. And the president said, no effing way. I'm not going to do that to my people. And so how interesting how it's all tied together. All these things are woven into this this mind rape.
Yeah. And I thought the president of Belarus had some great advice, too. Take a sauna and drink some vodka. That'll keep you nice and healthy.
Right on.
Hey, you want to know why you see all these historic portraits of Masons with the hand in like their jacket or their pocket like that? You know, because they can't quite capture them while they've got their hand in yours. Yeah, isn't that pretty wild? I think that's kind of a good association to put together there, because I'm looking at all this theater. They seem to have this in common, too.
Yes, we are. We're just on. Welcome back to hour two of Operation Scorpio. We're Scorpio, would you like to introduce your featured guest?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, we missed all that ranting.
Well, we were on YouTube, but not on
and Facebook and Twitter. We simulcast.
But not on Revolution Radio. So we're here with Gertchen from Canada. And Gertchen, why don't you just start off by introducing yourself and just say a little bit about who you are and what you stand for.
Well, okay, who am I? I am a son of God. Jesus of Nazareth is my older brother. I was born in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, in 1950. My family emigrated to Canada in 1960. I had no choice in that decision. And I'm a graduate of a couple of universities. I'm a composer of 16 symphonies and a bunch of music. I've written and published a whole bunch of books. And my paintings hang hither and thither. And that's basically what I am. I'm what they call a polymath, somebody who is interested in just about everything. And I am mostly interested in promulgating truth as I see it. I make videos. Some of my videos are very, very controversial. I am a vehement opponent of the international parasite. And I would like now to see us not just foist them on and other people to deal with, as has been done, not just in 110 places, but literally thousands of places. There are places that we don't even know of in the history of this planet and the presence of this parasite. They have been pushed hither and thither and foisted on other people, and that's unfair. We now need to take a very hard stand and once and for all solve this infernal Jewish question with a final solution and send them packing back to whatever planet they came from. I think its name is hell, but it is out there somewhere in the Draco system, I think, because that's another part of the story. And it's my contention that we are a zoo exhibit, basically, this planet. We are under observation by gigantic beings who reside within the moon, which is the space station they built by raping this planet and creating all these massive geological places that you call canyons. Those are strip mines, Copper Canyon, Grand Canyon, all these grand canyons around the planet are strip mines. And these slag heaps that were left over, you know them as volcanoes. In the mining process, you have slag heaps. And those are full of heavy metals. And that when they get jiggled, they tend to ignite and then all hell breaks loose. And that slag, you call it lava. But the creatures strip mined this planet. They cut down all the massive trees, some of which were literally miles tall. If you take a look at my video, My Two Bits Worth TV, episode 19, you'll find it on YouTube. Put headphones on because the sound is important. But I show you very clearly that buttes and mesas are the remnants of gigantic trees. And I do the math for you, and we can only come to the conclusion that it is likely that the beings who cut those trees down and strip mine this planet to get the raw materials to build their space station, the observation platform called the moon, that is, these beings have to be at least a half a mile tall, if you do the math. And I know it's hard for people to wrap their heads around, but the moon is not what NASA or anyone claims. And I even show you that it is quite plausible when you open your eyes and you look at what goes on with the moon. I think it actually rotates like a clock. The face of the moon rotates. And when you take a look at that video, now I may be totally out to lunch, and it's not the first time that I've been out to lunch, which is fine. I'm not afraid to, you know, stick my head out there and kind of throw some ideas around to consider. But somebody proved me wrong. And I think you're going to be hard pressed to do so now that all this evidence is coming to light.
Yeah, Gertjan, those are some interesting theories. I'm not sure if I agree with all of them, but I do believe
that. Well, you don't have to. That's fine.
No, I'm not disparaging your theories, though. But there are some things that point to you being correct. For one thing, there is quite a few references in some of the ancient writings that the moon was not in the sky at one time that humans actually remember. There was no moon in the sky. And there's evidence that the moon is not a solid object as well. So I don't know what you guys think about that. When they shot some kind of a missile at the moon and it rang like a bell.
Obama's administration.
So there's some other things that are very anomalous about it. The fact that it rotates perfectly, so that you only see one side of the moon is odd. There's a lot of anomalies about it that don't add up to the official story. And
that's
it is
a satellite to observe life on Earth. Take a look at that video, seriously. It's really well thought out. I spent a long time before I put it out there to make sure that the math was right. I had to go back several times as I was editing and editing and editing, you know. But I think I've got it right, guys. And this is, again, one of those things, just like according to Zachariah Sitchin in his book, The 12th Planet, he maintains that Venus was not there prior to 8,000 years ago.
You're referring to Velikovsky, I believe.
Velikovsky, World in Collisions. Yeah. But Zachariah Sitchin also talks about that. So maybe he was referencing Velikovsky, is possible. Yeah, but there seems to be evidence of that as well. And so there are cosmic circumstances that have accrued here within our local region that is information that has been suppressed from us all, which when you actually think in these terms, throws a completely different light on our history and all of it. And so we all four of us, I think, do agree that the entity are the children of Satan, the sons of the devil. Their synagogue is a synagogue of Satan. Well, Satan, Lucifer, they're not human. They are alien entities. They're called archangels, and they have done what they have done. But we do have, in fact, present here, a very well-organized, hive-minded, soulless being that I think is an entity with tentacles, and that they're like, it's like a fungus kind of like, where you have the creatures on the surface that we recognize as descendants of the Khazars, or the few tiny percentage of Jews that are the Sephardic, you know, Jews of Spain, say, but the majority of the people, the creatures, they look human, they're white-skinned. The reason they're white-skinned, to a large degree, not all, is because they are the descendants of people that evolved in a region called Khazaria, which, as you know, is a pretty large area. Mm-hmm. You know, for those of you who don't know, that's all of the Ukraine, Crimea, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, southwestern Russia. All of that was Khazaria and existed up till the 12th century. But yeah, as you know, and likely your listeners likely know, because, I mean, this is a different radio audience than mainstream Jews audiences. And you guys all know that, you know, David Duke, he keeps arguing against this Khazar theory, you know, and he throws aspersions at the 13th tribe, you know, Arthur Koestler's book. But you have to realize that Arthur Koestler and his wife were murdered because of that book, is my contention, and not just mine alone. So the argument in that book pertaining to the development of Khazaria and the conversion of the Khazarians to Judaic Talmudism is very well documented, not just in Arthur Koestler's book. So it surprises me that there's, you know, a so-called, you know, PhD out there with a reputation saying that that story is nonsense, which, you know, gives me some doubts about that particular individual and his points of view on all of this kind of story.
Gertjan, I don't think David Duke is a very reliable source. And, you know, I lived in New Orleans back during his heyday when he was a state congressman, and people that knew Duke, I ran in circles that, you know, knew people that were white nationalists or whatever you want to call them. Duke was not someone that had a good reputation amongst people who knew him. People did not like him. And, you know, he sold out his mailing list to the FBI when he got in trouble for campaign donations and stuff. He sold out his list to the FBI. So the guy snitched on people. And I just don't find him to be a credible source. And he's not someone that I personally would trust for much.
No,
anything.
I don't. And I would never go on his radio show. You know, yeah. I know Andy was always, oh, I want to get on David Duke's show. And then he wormed his way into Jeff Rentz's website, you know. But for all the years that I was working with Andy Hitchcock, but no, I've never given David Duke that level of credibility. I think David Duke is quite out to lunch, and he tends to rest on his laurels, which, you know, again, you know, none of us have to do that. We don't have to rest on our laurels. We create our laurels every day. I mean, we're all out there, you know, doing the thing and taking risks.
And you know, Gertjan, another person that did not like David Duke, who knew him very personally, was Tom Metzger. And Tom Metzger had nothing but bad things to say about David Duke on a personal level and about his character. And, Tom Metzger got a lot of bad press and a lot of bad raps. But, you know, I knew people that knew him, and I think he was a pretty good guy. At least he stood up for what he believed in. I didn't agree with everything he said, but I think he was a good guy and an honest man, too. Chris, why don't you jump in? Where do you want to take things with old Gertjan?
Well, I got a million places, but I don't think I have enough time.
What's the old part? I'm just coming out of adolescence, guys. I just turned 70, so
hey, stay young at heart, man. That's all you can do. But no, interesting stuff. I don't disagree with much of what you're saying. I could probably agree with a lot of it. And I'd have to say that with Duke, I think suspicions you can add to maybe his background was that he is, I think in USAID, he worked with them in the 1970s over in Southeast Asia, along with his father who worked for Royal Dutch Shell. So arguably speaking, he probably comes from a family that has been employed at some point in time by Rothschild, and he's probably involved with a lot of secret society stuff and probably put in to do what he does to gather people into a group that are disaffected righteously by the truth and to steer them into the rocks or into intellectual cul-de-sacs where they'll never really reach any sort of political power. They'll just remain in futility.
That's a very interesting idea, Chris. I hadn't considered that, but yeah, that he's like a disinformation agent. I have that suspicion about Jeff Rentz, for example, you know, and there are others out there.
Hey, you ever see David Koresh next to him? You ever look at a picture of David Koresh next to Jeff Rentz? One goes down, the other pops in the same exact time. Pretty wild shit, man. I know it's mind blowing. Look at the picture of AOC next to Hiba Abedin, Huma's sister, Hiba. Yeah, look at that. I mean, you'll just be like, what the heck is going on here?
Well, that's like looking at a picture of Justin Trudeau at age 40 without a beard and Fidel Castro at the same age. And which is interesting because I, for some things, have a memory like a steel trap. Okay. And in this particular case, I recall Margaret Trudeau being interviewed on CBC television after she had just returned from Cuba. And I will never forget this because she was asked directly, what did you think of Fidel Castro? And she literally gushed and she said, oh, he's quite a man. Just like that. Well, I mean, guys, I mean, you know, I'm sure you read very clearly what was implied there. And the time frame is just about right. So, you know, she created this spawn called Justin Trudeau.
And I think you're onto something very big there, Gertchen, because I think a lot of these people that pop up in the media, both actors, some of the famous actors, the politicians, they're bastard children of various bloodlines. And they have to do that so we don't realize just how small the family, the bloodlines really are. They have to have all these tentacles that come off. So you think, oh, like Bill Clinton, he's just a good old boy that became president. And there's a lot of evidence that Bill Clinton is a bastard son of one of the Rockefellers, either Lawrence or Winthrop.
There's no doubt.
Well, whatever that, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, there's no doubt that back in the day, Margaret Trudeau had an itch that needed to be scratched again and again.
And again. And Pierre was incapable. I suggest that Pierre Trudeau may have been impotent. That is my suspicion. And it always was strange for me growing up those years when Pierre – I was 18, I think, when 18 or 19 or something like that, when Pierre first came on the stage. And like as in normal – you know, we never heard a word about Obama, Dama, Rim, Ding Dong before he became suddenly all of a sudden here is a Negro in the White House. I mean, you know, so here suddenly this communist pock faced kind of.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. You froze up there for a second.
You know, everybody's all gushing over this ugly little lawyer. You know, and they make a big deal. He was in his 60s and he drove a little, you know, sports car and he rode on a bicycle. But for Pete's sake, I'm 70. I still go mountain biking, for heaven's sakes. That's just normal, you know, to make a big deal out of somebody who's in his 60s and, you know, he exhibits some athletic prowess, for example. We want a truck.
Obama's entire life story doesn't add up like so many of these other people that are thrust into the limelight. Elon Musk is another one, but you know, the whole story of Obama doesn't make sense. His rise to so-called power, his family background, he has deep connections to the CIA through his grandparents and his mother. And, you know, his first name was Barry Satoru. The Satoru character in Indonesia was another deep state CIA operative. And just the guy didn't do anything his entire life and he ends up president. It's just a manufactured personality. And he was charismatic at one point and certainly did a lot of damage.
Well, I'm a racist white supremacist. So just the very fact that there is a Negro in the White House, Muslim Negro homosexual in the White House, and it was in there for 8 years, that totally, no, I mean, I really had very little faith in political systems already at an early age, and I thought of democracy as nonsense back in my early 20s, so I've never voted in any elections because, I mean, what's the point of wasting my time doing that? You know, beware of people seeking public office. But here you have a constitution in the United States, and it was never applied because Barry never proved that he was born in the United States. Indeed, when he was elected, the people of Kenya were jumping up and down outside their stick houses with their dirt floors, no windows, no chimneys, no indoor plumbing, no dammed up stream, not even a plank. Yeah, and they're jumping up and down. Hooray, one of our own got into the White House. Yeah. But, you know, the thing about Barry Satoru is that he's one of those Negroes that should be on his knees every day thanking God that he got some Irish DNA, or maybe he got a bit of the taint. One of his ancestors was impregnated by one of the Jewish, crew of the slave ships, which is highly likely. They have no morals. They have no, you know, they'll stick it in whatever. And they love Negroes as their pets. Mm-hmm. If I can just finish this, because I'm on this loop. And just like people will say, oh yeah, I have Jewish friends, why are you throwing aspersions at the Jews in general? I have these friends, they're Jews, they're really nice. Yeah, well, oh, there was a cat on my chair just now, one of my cats, Avery. I have three of them, and I'm nice to those guys. They're my pets. It's the same thing. The Jew is nice to you because he sees you as a goyim, an animal in human skin. You're a pet, and they're nice to you. But they just as soon, if, you know, push comes to shove, they'd much rather have you truly be their slave and it be identified as such, and that if you step out of line, they'll whip you just as well, you know, like you'll give your cat a smack on the ass when he's on your table and you don't want him there. So
right, right. Giuseppe, you're cracking me up with your little diagram on there. And Gertchen, you struck a conversation about Jeff Rentz and Jeff Rentz's hair by mentioning him. Giuseppe, why don't you jump in? Where do you want to take this?
Well,
Jeff Rentz's hair.
And you don't like. Do you mind if I add something to what he was saying?
No, go ahead, Chris. Go. You go first, Chris. Go ahead.
Okay. Hey, I was going to say, in my opinion, Obama, just like Trump, were both brought in to really focus the righteous outrage of their base towards the, you know, supposed hope, and really they were meant to really deem them more and to doom them into the rocks. Just like if you look at what Obama, he probably did arguably more damage to blacks, Muslims, and the black community than any other president probably could have. And arguably speaking, maybe Trump did the same with the white middle class nationalist movements, let's just say. So I think sometimes that this is like what they do, is sending these people from the inside to doom the base into the rocks and to mobilize them by rhetoric and certainly not by pragmatic action. So this is my concern about Hitler as well. This is where I think that, like, he is a bastard child of George the Fifth, and that this is a Masonic thing that has been run by guys like Winston Stewart, Houston Chamberlain, or Eckhart, or some of these other guys like man, you could get into like Montague Norman or Elijah Moore, Horace Greeley Schacht, or the Bank of International Settlements into the economic miracle. Alfred Rosenberg being part of the Rosenberg Orsini family. Really, I think this is a Jewish order that has been a Masonic organization at the top of the Royal Europe for a long time, and has used Christianity as an instrument to deliver this control system over the multitudes, just like they have with Islam, just like they even do to a greater extent with more discipline to the Jews. And really, I think they don't believe in really any of the things that they the instruments that they use, they just, you know, expect their followers to, and really they punish them accordingly when they don't, and even punish them and sacrifice them when they do. So I think that the extermination thing in Europe was kind of like a purification of the faith, obviously, a move to create Israel, a move to get them off the gold and silver standard and onto the credit system that's run by these bankers. And I think that really you need a guy like Stalin and Hitler on both sides of this to bring that in. I think that's what that was. So I just want to clarify my position on that.
Well, I think that's an interesting theory. However, you have to realize that nobody is saying, even Jesus of Nazareth never claimed to be absolutely perfect. We all fall short of the glory which is God. And Adolf Hitler would certainly admit to that, as did Jesus of Nazareth admit to that. Within the government of Germany, there were lots of malcontents who were hell-bent on bringing down a noble experiment, a high-minded attempt to set things in order for a people that had been reduced to crawling about on their knees for a bread of or a crumb of bread, basically, after the Treaty of Versailles. And National Socialism, under the brilliant leadership of Adolf Hitler, turned that country around in 2.5 years. Within 3 years, it was again an economic powerhouse in the world, not just in Europe. And it clearly shows that the policies of National Socialism actually have a real positive benefit and a really excellent effect on the betterment of our lives on this planet. Indeed, the people of Germany, our own people, are not as well off under our so-called enlightened demonocracies, sick. It's nonsense to suggest that there is something wrong with National Socialism. It's the only political system that is proven to work. Democracy doesn't work. It's a top-down tyranny of the masses. Communism is like a worm eating all the best outside of the inside of the apple and destroying it from the inside out. And that's what we're faced with. Adolf Hitler and his brave soldiers sought to hold back the spread of Judaic communism, Satanistic practices, and all of this pedophilia and Jewish mayhem and malfeasance that we are seeing so obviously present today would not have existed even for a year or two if National Socialism had taken control of the planet and created a world where white people could once again thrive and achieve the incredible potential we're capable of. Right now, myself, and I'm sure you guys feel it too, we are being seriously held back like a racehorse with the reins tied to a steel post that's, you know, 6 feet into the ground. It can't move, and yet it wants to race because the COVID reins held by the Jews are totally preventing us from achieving our potentials, and for that alone, they need to be hunted down and hauled off into our people's courts, and the likes of Bill Gates and so forth need to be subjected to rope therapy on public television broadcast worldwide, in my humble opinion. All rights reserved.
Let's let Chris respond to some of your points, and then we'll let Giuseppe jump in. Go ahead, Chris. Why don't you respond to some of Gertchen's points?
I do agree with them on the justice is necessary, but my point would be it doesn't matter what program is put in that's offered by the international Jewish bankers that are running the system. They probably care not who makes the laws as long as they control the money. I doubt they really care what political system you follow as long as you pay your render unto Caesar what is theirs, you know, or whatever they want to call the instrument they're using at the time. Mm-hmm. So I think that this is like what empires and nation states and this whole UN colonization agenda is all about, is creating the law and the word to control people under the inversion that they try to put on. I think everything's an inversion. So if they're telling you that, you know, this is for freedom and democracy, it's to put you in chains and to put you on the hook for some massive insurmountable debt that these guys use economic sorcery on the world with.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Here. It's we are actually, all of us, pretty well, with few exceptions, are already slaves through the economic system we're entrapped in. Because right from birth, you're issued a warehouse. Well, your mother, your dad, together, if they're together, the world's all screwed up today. Boys don't know if they're boys. Girls don't know if they're girls. Now they can be a fire hydrant if they want. They will invent a pronoun. I don't know. That's a Judified world. But what happens is you're given a, or your parents are given a warehouse receipt, which is your birth certificate. And in the case of the Canadian birth certificate, it's on banker's paper. There are two registration numbers, one on the front and one on the back. And the one on the back is in red, and that's the index number for you as a commodity traded on the International Stock Exchange through New York. You're traded as a commodity, and people don't realize that. So the birth certificate immediately, already, right at that point, ensnares you into Judaic, Noahide, and Admiralty law. You know, you are birthed. You are, you know, birthed through the canal, birth canal. It's all, you know, maritime talk. And because you're now essentially an indentured slave of the international banking cartel, you are owned by corporations, all owned by Jews, or by individuals, even Warren Buffett. I bet you he has a portfolio of Goyim in his financial portfolio somewhere. And that's all a fact. And we know, bottom line, why did everybody kick these creatures out? We always hear, oh, yeah, it's because they found out about usury. No, it's not because of usury. Certainly, yes, we get pissed off at them for, you know, practice ripping us off and so on. Bottom line, when it was discovered where the children were disappearing to, in Canada, some 67,000 children a year go missing, and not all of them are returned to their parents. And now, thanks to the internet and brave truth warriors like yourselves and others, have been exposing this whole Jewish adrenochrome story and the international pedophile rings, all of it. My suggestion really is, people, the lines have long been drawn in granite, not just in sand. Those lines are fused. We are at war with principalities that are not of this world. And since they're not human, how is that any different than hunting down a feral dog or a cat that's raiding your chickens? You see?
Yeah.
And so it's the same as if you have an infestation of cockroaches in your kitchen. Are you going to negotiate with the head cockroach? No, you're not. You know, yeah. You're going to bring in either professional help. The Nazis are going to come and help you get rid of them cockroaches. You know, get my drift? And
sure.
That's what has to happen.
Negotiating with the head cockroach, that's quite a visual. Giuseppe, why don't you jump in, man? We haven't heard from you in a while.
Well, I have a question for the panel, beginning with Gertchen. Both Kaiser Wilhelm and Otto von Bismarck on their deathbeds said we should have never trusted the international Jew bankers, right? They tried to negotiate in good faith. And they got totally sodomized by the international Jew. Why is it that Hitler, instead of going after the riffraff of society, the gypsy, the Polish Catholic, the run of the mill Jew, why didn't he send his elite forces and wipe out every Rothschild? Why didn't he take the lesson of history and eliminate the international bankers? We would have national socialism then.
That's a great question.
He was way too kind. That's the problem with Adolf Hitler. He was not me. He was way too kind. Instead of letting the British army go back to England from Dunkirk, I would have grabbed them all and stuck them in holding places. I would have treated them with kindness and respect. They're just simple soldiers. They're dumber than a sack of nails in general, just like the majority of police officers. They're simple order takers. They don't have a conscience, therefore they're not even fully human. So he took pity on these poor creatures and sent them all shivering back to England out of the kindness of his heart, totally contrary to the suggestions of his generals, who were far more inclined towards wiping them all out while they were huddled on that beach. But that is, of course, not what happened. And, like I said before, Adolf Hitler was surrounded by people who resented the fact that a corporal, you know, was now head of the military and the government and so forth. These aristocrats, they resented Adolf Hitler. They didn't have the bravery awards that Adolf Hitler had, but he was only a corporal and he came from modest lower middle class circumstances. And so that kind of attitude is something that still to some degree is prevalent in Europe. I grew up in Europe. And there is definitely a class system still in place, very much so in the Netherlands, for example. I see it certainly in my mom, who comes from some fairly substantial circumstances. You know, her parents were wealthy merchants, and same for my dad's side of the family. They were well-off merchant class people. But, you know, there's a certain attitude. You know, we have our certain... You know, it's not like in India where, you know, you're an untouchable and you're, you know, relegated to living in the street or that sort of thing. But there definitely is an awareness of class distinctions, the schools you've gone to, the way you speak and so on. And people recognize that. And so in the case of Adolf Hitler, he was a simple corporal trying to do his best amongst a bunch of, you know, very aristocratic, wealthy generals that figured, wait a minute, you know, how can a corporal be in charge? It's just like, you know, we say that even amongst ourselves. We look at a Negro driving a brand new Ferrari convertible and we, wait a minute, those people never invented a plank. How is it possible he's driving this car that there's no way I can drive that car? You know what I'm saying? So there's all of this kind of, you know, it's, we have to just take a look at Adolf Hitler and read his book, Mein Kampf, which is interesting because by the time I read Mein Kampf, I had already read a ton of other stuff. You guys mentioned earlier the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, and I'd done graduate work in Marxism and blah, blah, blah. You know, I've read a stack of books on Marxism. You know, I studied with a renowned Marxist scholar at the University of Alberta. And, you know, I recognize that basically, you know, these guys, Karl Marx, they're very eloquent in their convoluted arguments. And they create these massive things like Das Kapital. Very few people, I guarantee, have really read that thing cover to cover. It's a struggle to get through it. But that's how they do it. Because most people don't have the attention span to read, and with all due respect, but it's a fact, I can't sit down and read Das Kapital in a single reading, if you will, you know, yeah. But it's so convoluted. And because of that, that's how they slip things in. And, you know, you look at, for example, the Patriot Act in the United States. I doubt if any congressperson has actually read that document.
Right. And I'm sure they haven't. And, you know, I guess one place where I see it a little differently is it seems to me that every government, no matter who's in charge or what you call it, every government sort of has a timeline and a stages of life that it goes through. And like even we'll say, for example, Hitler, there was a whole line of people that were wanting to take his place and be the top dog. And so I think the problem I have with any government structure that has too much power is that it always ends up in corruption. And the government always seems to turn on its own people at some point. And I think we're sort of in the end game of that now with Western governments, which are, of course, are all corrupted by Jewish influence at the top and the Jewish banking system. And I thought that Giuseppe brought up a good point that why didn't Hitler try to take out the bankers? He could have sent assassins in to kill these people in their counting houses and really brought serious fear into these people's lives, but that never seemed to happen.
Yeah, well, he was thinking, he was trying to cooperate with the International Jewish Congress. The agenda was not to exterminate the Jew off the planet, was simply to, again, relocate it to another place. And Germany suggested Uganda or Madagascar, beautiful, salubrious locations, fertile, rich in resources, white people and, you know, Jews that are, you know, able to do things a little bit for themselves without having to rely on slave labor. But they could beat a few natives into doing some work, and they could have turned that place into something that it isn't, but it certainly could be. But that's a problem with Negroes. They can't run anything except into the ground. So, but Uganda would have been great. But no, they insisted on Palestine. And so that's the story. And Adolf Hitler and his government, they just wanted to get the Jew out of Germany. And, you know, by cooperating with the banksters, that's the way they were trying to affect this, you see.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Really that he didn't want war.
No, that's true. You know, if you read the book, The Young Hitler I Knew, it's the only book that I know that's actually written by someone who knew Hitler as a young man. When they were reunited years later, Hitler told him that he never wanted war and that he'd been forced into it by other influences. And so that's an interesting point. We seem to have an echo now, all of a sudden.
Yeah, that's odd. Let me try. I'm going to mute my mic and see if it's me.
Okay. Okay, I think, Giuseppe, you said we have a caller.
It's not me.
No, hour three, for hour three.
Okay. Yeah, great. Okay, yeah, but we got an echo going on here. I'm not sure what happened.
It's not my mic because I just turned it off.
Sometimes there's like echo remnants. What I would suggest is it happening on Revolution Radio? Let me give a listen. But we solved it a couple weeks ago when you guys
– It's solved. It's not doing it now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not doing it now.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, it's back. Yeah. Stephen Crawford had that same problem a few weeks ago when I was on a show with him. And then when I listened to the archive, I could listen to it. It's too horrible.
Well, Chris, hey, how about you
have some dude there, David?
Yeah. We have some friends listening in the background, maybe. Chris, why don't you jump in, man? Where do you want to take this?
Man, you can go anywhere you want with this. I just seen if we got an echo here with me. Seems like it a little bit, but Yeah, I'm just digging the conversation, and I'm just kind of thinking of how I want to lay out my show tonight. So this should be a good one.
I'd like to interject one thing for Gertchen's consideration of how do these unbelievably talented rappers get to drive Ferraris. I mean, the only answer is they're all Kangs.
Yeah, they's all Kangs. That's right. They invented the pyramids, don't you know? They built the seven wonders of the ancient world. They were Irishmen originally.
Yeah, we got this weird echo going now, man.
So I'm not hearing it, and I just checked Revolution Radio feed Skype, and it's not there. What I would suggest is you guys drop out of StreamYard completely, and then click the link again and come back in.
Yeah, let's try that. Let's do that real quick. Okay, it's pretty bad. All right.
Okay, StreamYard, eh? Okay.
In the meantime, welcome to the Giuseppe Show, and everybody will be back soon. It seems as though there's a weird function with here we go. People are coming back. There's Scorpio. Try it now, Scorpio.
Yeah, it sounds good to me now.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes with, you know, this digital sharing, it creates its own loop, its own echo, and then you have to reload it to eliminate it. It seems like that.
Oh, yeah.
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 All right. Here's
that behind beside you, that sort of curved device that's sitting right beside you on your right. What is that?
This right here?
Yes.
Well, what it is I'm also a singer-songwriter. This is my studio setup. So instead of having a full vocal booth, you know, with all the egg crate padding and all that, this is it's a little curved thing that gives you the same effect, and you can pick them up for about, you know, $200, $150 at from music stores. And so, you know, I just do my vocals with this instead of an actual vocal booth. And
so your microphone would be sitting inside there then. Inside,
yeah, see, that here's the microphone right here. And here's the windscreen, and then behind it is egg crate, and the brilliance of it is it's curved at like a 30-degree arc, so it totally protects any of slapback from the mic and everything. It really is very effective. Good. Works really good.
Nice. So, what kind of music do you do, Giuseppe?
I would say it's a combination. I'm self-taught. Of folk rock, I'll send you a link. You can check it out.
Please. I would love to. Yeah. I would love to. Yes. Some of my early stuff, I've got about 22 tracks on iCloud. I think it's called iCloud, or is it SoundCloud? Yeah, SoundCloud.
Yeah. Are you hearing the echo, Giuseppe?
No, I don't hear an echo at all.
I do.
Let's see. What can we do?
Oh, Chris, are you there?
Yeah, I'm muted.
Oh, no, you were just muted, but not muted.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, I've been muted, but I hear that echo too.
You know what it is? Is that our words are so important, the world wants to hear them twice.
That's right.
And Gertrude, you're listening through headphones, right? You're not listening through a speaker, right?
I have a microphone, which is my Yeti, and then the headphones, plugged into my laptop. The camera is my laptop camera. Yeah.
It's probably through the StreamYard itself. I mean, it's some like a couple weeks ago, I was driving Zapopo crazy, and he could hear it. And it sometimes when you're just broadcasting, especially with the sharing between Skype and StreamYard, I don't understand why that echo is created. And, I would just suggest try to leave and come back again, because eventually it will. I don't think it's anybody's headsets. It's something with the actual software we're using.
Yeah, I agree. And it comes and goes. It's like when you were just talking just now, there was no echo. But now that I'm talking, there's an echo.
Well, someone in the chat saying that everyone has an echo but Giuseppe.
Oh. Well, way to go, for Giuseppe.
UK Steve, do you want to come in through StreamYard?
Or yeah, he does. Yeah.
Okay, let me send him the
link. Yeah, I gave him the link.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah.
See here? Oh, there he is. Okay. Hey, Steve.
Oh, we got somebody else. UK
Come on
Steve.
In, UK okay. Steve.
I know UK Steve.
How's it going, Steve?
Hey, Steve, how are you, man?
Steve, are you there?
Hello, Steve.
Yeah, can you
hear me?
Governor?
Now we can hear you.
Twice.
I'm okay. Can you hear me okay, guys?
Yeah.
I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah.
Sounds like a song.
There's about a 10-second delay. It's really bad echo.
Yeah, there is a bad echo, man. It's weird. We are doing fine for about the first hour and a half, and then we get this echo bump here.
I would just say everybody drop out and try coming back in. I mean, it's the only thing that's
worth. Yeah, let's everyone drop out, and we'll try to come back in a second time, see if that helps.
If you want to check out Giuseppe's music, Lumen, L-U-M-E-N, Jingos, J-N-G-O-S .com. You can hear it there. Gertchen's back. Say something, Gertchen.
I'm back.
Do you hear an echo?
Nope.
Good.
Do you? No.
No, I never do. That's the weird thing. There's Scorpio. Okay. Do you hear an echo, Scorpio?
No. Good. Sounds good now.
Good.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it sounds perfect now.
Something in their way they do things with audio and video is it just builds up. It's a remnant, a digital remnant somehow. I don't know what they do that. But some days you get it, and like yesterday, nothing. It worked perfectly on the perfect triangle. So I don't know any way to fix it except we keep jumping in and out till we don't have it.
Well, they're saying Rev Radio is perfect, so there's no echo coming on there at least.
Yeah. So.
And Zap over at Mammy's is going to have another tampon moment because of all the echo.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty Mammy. Good. That's pretty Zap, good. Eh? Yeah. Okay, so
let's see who's
we're
here.
We're still waiting for Chris and Steve to come back in.
There they are.
Here comes. Oh, here we go. Ask and you shall receive. Well, Steve, why don't you jump in, man? Where do you want to take this conversation, my friend?
Well, can I just do a sound check? Can you people hear me okay?
Yeah, you sound good.
Much really? Better.
You sound like an Englishman.
Yeah, that's the only problem. You sound like an Englishman. Other than that, you sound fine. No.
Yes.
All right. This sounds much, much better, so I'm quite happy. I don't want to take it. I've got lots of stuff and material to cover. So there's stuff to do with hedge funds, there's stuff to do with the mask wearers, and the goldsmiths. So I have a little bit to do with goldsmiths. I
want to okay, well, do you want to weigh in on Adolf Hitler? We were sort of touching upon that before you came aboard. Do you want to weigh in on that or go on to another topic?
My view is Hitler was trying to do the best for his people. I think he did a deal with the devil via the Wittgensteins, 1,000 tons of gold and an unknown sum of cash. He did it because he knew there was a war coming against the Bolsheviks, so he'd take any money he could get his hands on, which gave him the pretext to invade Poland under the Ribbentrop Pact. Now, it's interesting you said Tom Metzger, because Tom Metzger, I'm pretty much in line with what you said, Scorpio. He did out David Duke as well. I found that interesting. But he made a point about how they should have just not invaded Poland and dug into Germany, bought more time until nuclear weapons turned up, and they would have been able to evacuate those Germans instead of 60 to 80,000 Germans being killed, probably by foreign special forces to get an international war going. So maybe there's some validity to that. However, I think he was free of the Jew the moment he got rid of Schacht. So in 1939 onwards, I think where he was using barter bonds to directly barter with other countries, good for good, service for service. I think from that moment, he was his own player. He went off the reservation and we see the Time Man of the Year in Wall Street being financed by Wall Street. Although I wouldn't recommend falling into the trap of the Anthony Sutton work, but more the Wittgenstein route, because that is real.
That's an interesting analysis, Steve. I think he did go off the reservation.
I would say he fought the fight against the Bolsheviks, and what was that in the German interest, the national interest? Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think you made a good point. I think... you know, if you look at Anthony Sutton's work and the fact that he was, you know, Man of the Year on Time magazine, it does seem that somewhere along the line, Hitler went off the reservation. Certainly so.
Yeah, and I think the same thing with Stalin as well. I think when they feel confident enough with a large enough army, they realize they need their paymaster, which has crafted them probably from a very young age. So I think there's kind of an externalization of self-actualization with a lot of these leaders if they have a large enough army which can take on their former paymaster. I think that's very much the same with Hitler. Was Hitler a German nationalist? No. He was a racial socialist. So he would be putting the whole white race first, so he would include the European theatre rather than just Germany. he was also a socialist in the sense of reappropriating the term socialism in its northern working class sense and origination, rather than a Marxist sense, which became a Marxist-Leninist position on that term socialism, in a sense of advocating a domestic Reich, civilian sort of politik, which was a solution and a moral shift from capitalism and demonocracy, which was the Weimar German Republic, backed up, by the way, by the Bauhaus movement, which is what I wanted to touch upon later on with the Green Party and these green revolutions with the green movement, all seem to be a front for the Bauhaus of Weimar Republic movement, like a failed occult movement, which is trying to find some sort of reconstructionist and Renaissance view today in today's economic strife. Yes, Hitler. I think he was co-opted, possibly. I thought some of his strategic decisions are inexplicable. Why he didn't annihilate the British when he had the chance, I don't know. There's things that don't make sense about him.
Yeah.
But if you go by the original Hitler, and you get this with Paul McCartney, multiple versions of the same man, the early Hitler until 1921, that does seem to be the real Hitler, and he was a brave man. He was a man that was on the streets, and I think something happened to him when he came via UK, possibly. So if it is true, he went to Liverpool and then back down through London. We have to ask the question, did Rothschild get hold of him? Because he's running through their territory. Is he the same guy that comes back to lead Germany out of prison? That's the number two question, not being asked by anyone. The man as the leader going forward up until 1939, I would say Germany became a power as soon as it took control of its own money supply and they closed ranks and they went for the international do. Why didn't assassinate them as I would do internationally, simultaneously at once, randomized as well, strike fear in them? I don't know. And I don't think Hitler saw the greater plan. He wasn't willing perhaps to sacrifice his people like perhaps I would if I was going to kill every banker, Jewish banker in existence. So I think maybe through love, he loved these people. And I want to reserve full judgment on Hitler for that reason.
Yeah, that's something that Jew can't stand, is somebody loving their people. You know, we don't see a lot of leaders in the world loving their people. We certainly don't see Angela Merkel in love with the German people. And I don't think that Bojo is particularly in love with British people. We see it here. Our Justin Trudeau, he's a psychopath. He doesn't, you know, he even said that this whole idea of, you know, some kind of a leadership role, if you will, played by white people, is going to make a really good seat cushion, a back of a chair, an arm sleeve tattoo. Oh, you can turn that into several purses or likely a few belts, maybe a pair of shoes. And that is why they've got all these white goyim out there getting all tattooed up all over. Because who invented the lampshade story in the first place?
I'd like to interject briefly that we're back on Revolution Radio for the final hour of Operation Scorpio. Here's your host, Scorpio.
Okay, guys, thanks for hanging in there. We're here on the final hour, hour number three, and it's not the final solution, but it is the final hour. And I'm here with Giuseppe, my co-host from the District of Criminals, Brutal Honesty, a.k.a. Chris Weinert. And Steve from the UK and Gertchen from Canada. And we're having quite a lively discussion. And, you know, guys, I just want to see what Gertchen and Steve's take is on this to begin with. You know, it seems to me that we're entering into the end game of this government, this control factor that runs Western civilization. And, you know, we're entering into this final stage of genocide where they're literally trying to kill their own people, crash the economy, and bring in a new system that is going to make communism look like a walk in the park. What is your take on what stage we're in and what where they're trying to take civilization. Maybe Gertchen can go first, and then Steve, and then the rest of us can jump in.
Well, I think that a really great reflection regarding where we are at is when I'm in the Real Canadian Superstore to buy groceries now, most often I'm the only human being left in the store. Everybody else is wearing a face diaper. And so, again, that indicates to me that people have set aside their ability to think for themselves and basically have turned themselves into sheepings. Those are sheep lemming crosses. That's what they are. And they have a parrot brain that just parrots the stuff they hear on mainstream news. And mainstream Jews give them the same song and dance pony show. Doesn't matter what country you're in. It's all the same script. And the people have all bought into it. And that shows you what a sad reflection that is on the public school system. You know, they all went to school. I taught in a public high school as a fine arts teacher for 20 years. I threw away a six-figure job because by 2001, I saw the unfolding agenda. You know, gay Caballero Jews are running the International Baccalaureate Program. They run the schools. They are bringing in all kinds of subversive elements and destroying what was once, you know, something that was better than what it is now. And when I saw that my students were essentially entire classes over a 20-year period, I noticed how they were dumbing them down. The kids were becoming dumber as a group. You know, individual aberrations, certainly. You know, there's always those that stand out and are not so victimized. We all went through it, but we are not so, you know, destroyed by it. That's why we are able to do what we're doing. But for most people, when you suggest that there is even an idea that the moon might not have existed at one point and that it could be an artificial, that alone, their eyes open up and they look scared, like, holy smokes, like, what is it that I'm talking to, instead of engaging that person in a conversation and, you know, coming to some kind of a overstanding. But most people, they don't get there. They stay in an understanding position where they're under the dictates and definitions of other people. And they are victims of authority figures. And so they figure that a slimy little cockroach Jew like Anthony Fauci has credibility. And they give him that credibility and they all walk around with the mask on, and they practice this ridiculous idea of social distancing and quarantines, and it's all fundamentally based on the premise that these creatures, the government, this organized mind control has jurisdiction over us, when in fact, if you are, well, although I'm not a Christian, but there is some stuff in the Christian Bible that is very beneficial to us. When Jesus says, for example, call no man master, not even the Messiah. In other words, you have no one over you but God that establishes you as a sovereign being. And all of these claims of jurisdiction by governments and by judges and shysters, i.e. lawyers, it's all because you buy into it, because you submit right to it, because you agree to this subterfuge, to this hoax. And so don't give them that credibility. Nobody has jurisdiction over you. And in common law, a lot of the things that we are being charged with and fined over are totally illegal. I've submitted a charter challenge to the Attorney General of Canada, and with copies to the Solicitor General in Alberta and the Premier and our Mayor. And I basically laid it out for them in a substantial document that everything they're doing is totally contrary to the Constitution, 1982 Bill of Rights, which is the supreme law for Canada. And any one of you living in Commonwealth countries, this information is applicable. And I am happy to send you a free PDF of this charter challenge with a copy of the letter that's gone to the Attorney General, so you can modify it for yourself and do the same thing. Because if we, you got to take the position. A public servant, which is the Attorney General, just Minister of Justice, is a public servant. My opening statement in the letter to him is that I am your master because you are a public servant. And as your master, here are your instructions. And so, you know, that's what you would get. So all you have to do is email me.
Can I just make a quick comment?
Yes, yeah. I sent it to you, Steve.
Let me jump in real quick, Steve. I think we need to create our own reset. We can no longer accept that we have these government lords that can tell us when we can go out, when we can work, when to put on a mask, when to go to the bathroom. We need to rethink all of this and create a new system for ourselves that's completely outside the control of these so-called elite parasites. Steve, go ahead.
When we're talking about them being a master, yeah, then they don't believe in any rules per se. They deliberately attempt to break those rules. And because they fear the criminals with guns more than you without guns, those people don't care about the law at all. So you find that your judges become corrupt above a district level. You find that your police become corrupt above a chief constable level. You start to find in the high money cases, the accountancy firms and solicitor firms are all corrupt too. And the reason for that is they're not suffering any consequences. And God will obviously make them suffer consequences in hell, which is where we're going to send them. But we have to understand that they need to fear consequences.
Indeed, indeed.
When we're talking about rope therapy, we actually do dangle the rope there, and we are going to hang you, okay? And that is what will then get the person who's legally submitted an application with said document, paid with a fee paid for, actually acted on, rather than thousands of sealed indictments. I want to actually see something with good evidence, of a crime being committed, actually being prosecuted and consequences being paid. And if we don't do that, we're not going to be able to retake the judiciary. We're just going to have to wipe them out.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. That's why I advocate we implement the common law and get enough of us together into a public house. We grab one of these cockroaches and bring them into the public house. That's what a public house is for. It's not just there for drinking pints of ale. It's there to conduct the public's business. It's a public house. And that's where you have a half a court and you appoint somebody whom you all trust, who is impartial, to be the judge. And then one of you, one of us becomes the prosecutor and we can give them a, he can appoint one of his own kike lawyers if he wants to defend him. And then we conduct a proper trial. And then when he is determined to be guilty without any doubt whatsoever, we don't waste a lot of time by having him, you know, walking about in cell for a few days trying to get his affairs in order. No, the moment he is adjudged guilty, he's taken out and either shot or hanged. At least we give him a choice. But that is what has to happen. It is the only way this will come around, this will change. We need to be strong and we need to be overt. And in times of war, things get nasty. And we are at war. There is no question of that.
Oh, absolutely. And that the public needs to understand that war has been declared on us, not the other way around. Maleficus just posted a great quote in the chat, governments do not govern, but merely control the machinery of government, being themselves controlled by the hidden hand. Prime Minister Disraeli, first Jewish Prime Minister of Great Britain. Very true. A rare time where a politician is telling the truth. Chris, why don't you jump in and add what you want to put into this conversation?
I'm sorry, man. I get pulled in three different directions. I think that really the silver movement is something that maybe people need to consider because, obviously the philanthropist billionaires that are trying to control us through this technocratic colonialization model are really not the type to think with their hearts or minds.
Sorry, I got like six things going on here. You got to hit them in their wallets in order for them to really understand what's going on. And I think, you know, them getting called to the carpet on silver would be a great way to do that, amongst many things. You know, because most of the stuff is an eminence run, a Ponzi scheme, and the only thing that keeps it together is our faith and our trust in it. And they betrayed that at every turn. So I think that at some point in time, we have to understand that they've been using our governments, our military, our people, our citizens against each other in a military operation to dispossess us and to disenfranchise us. And once people get to that point, I think we can start talking.
Well, yeah. And, you know, there's no question that the root of all evil, the root of all of our problems is this phony money system that's controlled by the international Jewish parasites. And that has to be addressed. But, you know, I don't know how we begin this, because as long as we live under this money system where they can just print up a trillion here and a trillion there, and, you know, and do whatever they want with it, nothing's going to change.
Well, Scorpio, can I comment on that, please?
Yeah, please do.
Part of what I wanted to talk about today was knowing who the enemy actually is, putting names to faces. So what I'd like to suggest is, after I just go through some hedge funds, like the top 10 hedge funds, so people can be familiar with their name, is I'd like to look at Nathaniel Rothschild and the hedge fund he's been running in Eastern Europe, and how we can sort of use this strategy to selectively target the very people we're talking about. So just very briefly, and I will try and make this very brief if I may. The top 10 as follows. Number one, I'm not sure this is in particular order, but it seemed roughly in order, okay? So we got Bridgewater Associates, okay? Westport, Connecticut, I believe, pension funds, foreign governments, central banks, university endowments, charitable foundations, and other institutional investors. Co-chairman and co-chief investment officer, Ray Dalio, founded the firm in 1975 in his New York apartment. Now, the assets here are $138 billion. Number two, Renaissance Technologies. The New York, based quantitative hedge fund that uses mathematical and statistical methods to uncover technical indicators that drive its automated trading strategies. By to US and other international equities, debt instruments, futures contracts, power contracts, and foreign exchange. The fund is $133 billion. Now, I can go on through there. We've got the Man Group, $117 billion. AQR Capital Management, $224 billion. Two Sigma Investments, $66 billion. Number six, Millennium Management, $35 billion. Oh, sorry, $42 billion. Number seven, Elliott Management, we've got coming in at $73 billion. Number eight, BlackRock, very interesting, $1.9 trillion in assets. And they're hedge funding right now. If we can short squeeze the most leveraged BlackRock position, well, they're shorting, and preferably with option overflow, so they're shorting more than 100% of the stock. If you can do that, BlackRock, you can hit the largest hedge fund in the world, just throwing it out there. Number nine, Citadel Advisors, popping in, coming in at $28 billion. And number 10, Davidson Kempner Capital Management. They come in at $35 billion. Now, okay. When we do some math here, this seems to me to add up to quite $1.7 trillion of the top 10 hedge funds. That's quite a lot, which is steering the economy at the moment. If we're able to sort of look and target these people, what they're shorting, for example, okay, and they're buying options to do that so they can do more than 100%, if we can somehow get insiders like they did on the Wall Street Bets and Reddit, if we can actually find out what their short positions are and the most leveraged ones they have and target those, we can actually hurt them in their wallet and make them poor.
The GameStop methodology, is that what you're referring to, kind of?
Yeah, and I think it's a way of fighting back. So people are looking like for solutions as to how do we attack these
hedge funds, which have uber billions at their disposal, when we're the little guy with very little actionable value. I think we can take a lesson out of that book and not just target hedge funds, target Jewish hedge funds. So when we look at, for example, Nathaniel Rothschild, he's got, I think it's Atticus Capital, is Nathaniel Rothschild, does 9 billion. Yeah. And he's running the Eastern European Ukraine market at the moment. So I reckon most of your anti-Russian sentiment is actually to cover Nathan Rothschild's move, as he's leading the charge for Western capital into Eastern Europe and essentially take it over against the domestic Putin dudes. Yeah. So that's why I reckon a lot of that explains it. And if we can target Atticus Capital, AWTICUS, it's a way of actually meme stonking people like Nat Rothschild.
Yeah, because it's hard to know where the starting point is. I think that's a great idea. And we saw what happened in real time with this GameStop thing. They caused some serious damage to these hedge funds and Jewish investors. But one thing that's clear is we're not going to get any help from any government in the Western world. Sitting around thinking that someone within the government is going to help us is completely fallacious. And in fact,
private power.
Yeah, right. And look what happened as the result of the GameStop thing. You have Elizabeth Warren and other people saying, oh, we need to have more regulations in Wall Street. Never.
Now, can I just make another further comment? All this money that the Rothschild, Rockefellers, and Goldsmiths, I'm going to lead on to them in a second. I've noticed these color revolutions, especially the green one, the Green Party, the environmental ethic, the conservation, carbon tax credit money. I think they're a front for the powerhouse movement. I think this is a Weimar Germany replay, and a lot of the esoteric nature of the top, be it scumbag, black magic, a lot of it does have a lot of powerhouse pseudo ideology to it, which went extinct with Weimar Germany, thanks to Adolf Hitler. So I'm wondering if when we look into the homosexual politics, when we look into the degenerate politics in the vice-led private lives of these people, might be some sort of powerhouse subculture to that within the ultra mega elite rich Jews that are outside Orthodoxy, so or Reform Judaism. So just bear that in mind, that there might be an esoteric element to the Green Party and all this money which is being used to bribe everyone. So they bribe their leader. That's why they have a shit leader rather than a leader who is who loves their people and with it. This could be where it's coming from. This powerhouse movement, it was all based on being bribed. Do anything you want. All these porn stars taking all this money and living a lifespan of 46 years old, living for the now. It's very similar to that. They're very bribeable. So I think a lot of this money that's been printed by these and run by these hedge funds, I think I think being used to bribe people and bribe culture en masse. I also think that... GameStop hit was actually Nathaniel Rothschild hit. So I reckon it was one hedge fund pretending to be the little guy to get them plastered all around social media to take out Melvin Capital Management, a rival, because they eat each other. And that's what happened. And the other hedge funds got in on top of that. And at the end, there was all sorts of people lost out. But the point had been made that the hedge funds had been targeted. And I think it wouldn't surprise me, and we have to do a quick due check here, that it wasn't Nathaniel Rothschild taking over the Robin hijacking the Robin Hood app and market and combining that with Wall Street Bets to get leverage. So we have to be careful there about adopting who set that meme off. I believe it's someone called Keith Patrick Gill. We'd have to check him out on the show. We'll have to look about that. But just bear that in mind as a quick do check. So this hedge fund money is being used to bribe culture, to turn all these CEOs and 100 grand into faggots, into people pushing the neoliberal agenda. absolutely amoral people, don't care except about opulence and probably their own neck. And we've got to make sure those two things they pay deeply.
You know, those are interesting points. Yeah. Well, let me ask anyone on the panel here, everyone on the panel, you know, what's the starting point for us? Because it's clear that, you know, as I enter this journey further down the road, it's clear to me that, you know, all the institutions, all the Western governments, the think tanks, the police forces, the military, they're all under the control of a very small group of people. That's why we know that, because they're all pushing for the same exact agenda. If the control were in different hands, there'd be different ideas put forward to the world about how we proceed forward. But instead, it's just this, you know, unison, this message of unison. It's a monoculture message. So what's the starting point for us to try to create a new sort of civilization for people of like mind to live together and to create a different way of interacting and a different monetary system? What do you guys think the starting point is for us?
If we could marshal our wealthy members to consider purchasing what Ayn Rand called Gulch, a place that is safe and protected, perhaps a mountain valley which can be walled off at either end, and establish a white-only nation where we take back control of the schooling of our children, because that's really kind of where it has to begin. What they are doing with this COVID cost is they are reprogramming our children against us on a 5-year plan, you see. So it's COVID-19, then 2021, et cetera. You guys have already spoken of this, but that is the story. And so in a 5-year period of subjecting little children, very impressionable from kindergarten on up to say grade 5 or 6, to these draconian measures, social distancing, mask wearing, all of it, total isolation from their peers, they are mentally affecting these children, and they will become ever more inclined towards psychopathies that are going to be very destructive of the older people. That's whom they are trying to kill off, because I told you I'm just coming out of adolescence, but David, you already identified that I'm old. So, okay, I'll have to. It's all good, dude. But, you know, us older folks who know the story, we're being killed off. And so what's happening is that the world, the people are being reprogrammed into simple speak. And by and large, a large number of young people today, their minds are completely scrambled. Some of them cannot even differentiate between the video game they're engaged in and the real world, because it sort of slips back and forth. And some of these video characters are actually like the real people, just like that generation, this 20-somethings. They talk about Star Wars as if that was, you know, some kind of, just like people talk about stories from the Bible. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like that. And it's very strange what's being done. And as I told you, I was recognizing the evolution of that sort of degradation of the intellectual potential of our children and the people of our race in the schools. And so I got out, and you know, whatever, that's the rest of the story for now. But the thing is that we need to take back that control. The public fool system has gay caballeros in dresses reading to children, you know, that sort of thing going on. You know, they're promoting the gay agenda in the public fool system because that's the political correct position to take.
Sure.
And yet, you know, I have always maintained that somebody who prefers an anus to a vagina is obviously mentally ill.
There's something not right there.
No, there isn't.
Yeah. And, you know, guys, the other thing, too, is, you know, you mentioned that they have this plan to keep COVID 2021, 22. you know, if you read this document that's been put on the internet called the coming SPARS pandemic that they have planned for sometime in 2025, they say that, well, after 4 years of various COVID strains, people live in isolation. They're on the internet all the time. They're working from home. Everybody's disconnected from each other. That's the plan they have for us. So this is a reality we cannot accept. They want to keep this going until 2028 at least, which puts us very close to 2030. So Giuseppe, let me get your take. Where do we start to start creating a new reality for ourselves and our people? Oh, no, go ahead. Finish up, Gertchen, then let's let Giuseppe jump in.
Yeah, no, go ahead. I've said my piece. I'm content.
Well, I'm deeply concerned by them, their gay caballeros. I just think that what we have now... I just think that what we are forced to experience is tyranny by the weaponized minority, right? You've got three small segments of the population globally. The Jew is under 1% of the global population. The homosexual is, you know, 1 to 2% of the global population. The Kangs have a lot of global population, but in America, the blacks are 13% of the population. And yet, if you watch the internationalist Jew globalist media and you monitor the goings-on of the traitorous Groper Joe administration, you'd think that white European descendants, who are a majority of this country, and if you add to the white European majority the actual working class and above blacks and working class and above Mexicans who don't want anything to do with the gay caballeros and with the lunatics in the Antifa, Black Lives Matter, burn, loot, and murder communists. If you set aside the questions of tribalism and melatonin, you've got a giant majority in this country who wants nothing to do with this deviant satanic agenda. And yet tune into the television, tune into what the government is promulgating now, and you'd think that these weaponized hyper minorities were the vast majority of this country, and they're being served. The absurdity of the majority of decent people being vilified and not served by the government just shows how traitorous and how despicable and how controlled by the internationalist Jew this government and all Western governments now are.
Well, what's our starting point? Those are some great points, Giuseppe, but what do you see as our starting point in trying to recreate something separate from this future they have planned for us?
Got to create a gray market and a barter market, and, you know, it has to be localized at best, maybe regionalized, so people start growing small to medium-sized organic crops. And like me as an acupuncturist, I could barter for their natural food, keep them healthy. You have to disconnect from the internationalist Jew big pharma poisoning system. You have to disconnect from everything that they're trying to get you to do in service to their satanic slavery. Now, I don't mm-hmm. – I mean, I think you put a – I think you put a – bullseye on your back if you stop paying taxes. I mean, if everybody stopped, then there'd be too many. But, you know, it's tough when you have the courage and you're one of the only ones. So maybe figure out ways to game the system, but don't put a target on your back. And at the same time, migrate to a gray market, to an independent, natural, organic, separate existence. I mean, nothing that the internationalist Jew is trying to ram down your throat and ram up your pooper is worth doing.
Speaking of ramming up your pooper, you know, Klaus has introduced the new anal Schwab.
Yes, yes. Klaus's
anal Schwab.
Yeah, Klaus Schwab's a German Jew, and so are all of his cohorts. This is another Jewish-led movement.
Yeah. Oh, look at that. Who brought that on? Oh, that's great. Anal Schwab.
Steve, I think you wanted to jump in. And then let's hear from Chris after Steve. We haven't heard from Chris in a while. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah.
Okay, so I just wanted to make touch on those two points there. One, what we're going to do through to 2022, because even if they wanted to, I know for a fact they can't vax everyone on their current timescale. Not possible. At the moment, 8% of the US have taken the first jab, even less the second. Israel is the leading country for having jabs, and it's 55% for a first jab, going down to like 20-odd% for the second jab. But Israel leads the pack with the US on the jabs, because they jab and go is the new mojo. So beware that jab and go in the next 2 years. Beware the mask wearers. They're the enemy, the mask wearers. They are your enemy, the mask wearers.
Mm-hmm.
They are so.
They're going to come for you. Yeah. And I want to talk about the vaccine certificates, controlling where you go, what jobs you have. Okay, in this environment, so don't get a vaccine certificate. Learn your way around them. So the environment we'll be facing in the next couple of years is a secular inflation environment. The bond market is going to go buckaroo. Whilst the Fed seem to think they can walk the pony around the horse, around the field and peg it into the ground, if that horse gets spooked, it's going to go buckaroo and it's just going to rip up the post and run off down the field. So that will lead to the Venezuelization of the entire West. 2,600 mega hash. You might want to get yourself a Phoenix miner. Very hot if you can get hold of one of them. So try and get cash is king. A little bit of silver, in my opinion. People can't afford gold. And if you do working, if you're an advanced user like I am, you want to be targeting specifically hedge funds on inside information on which positions they're shorting with options with more than 100% overflow, and rinse and repeat. Right? Okay. Fight back. And I really do believe that we should be proactive in the next 2 years within that hostile environment.
Everybody would like to interject. We've got a caller. The legendary Paul from California is now on the line. Paul, what would you like to say?
All right.
Well, thank you, guys. The first thing I want to say is what a great show. I've got many, many years of enjoyable radio under my belt. And, Gershon, I have to say that you are one of the more interesting people I've ever heard. In fact, you're exactly the kind of guy, if I was to meet you out somewhere, I would just keep buying you drinks to hear what you're going to say next. So,
well, it'd be a very cheap night for you because I'm not much of a drinker. But thanks for the offer. I highly appreciate it. I certainly, I'll enjoy a glass of wine with you for sure.
Right. Among the number of things that I could touch upon, we have limited time, but I'm getting glimpses out here of sort of coming out of the under the spell. There's a sort of a hair shop, beauty parlor kind of thing next to a little shopping center where I go to quite a bit. It's mixed men and women. And the other night I just happened to be walking by, and there was only one person in there with a mask. Everybody else, there was probably at least, I would say, seven to, maybe eight or nine people in there. And one of the hairdressers had a mask, and all the other customers and hairdressers did not. And then also on the same night, I walked by this martial arts studio that is actually across the street. And in the past, I had seen them open, and the students all inside were wearing masks, and the instructor was wearing a mask. Well, on this particular occasion, as I walked by, they had put up some sort of a film, if you will. I don't know if they were coverings, but some sort of a film on the window so you couldn't really see inside very well except through cracks in between. And I looked inside, and none of the kids or the instructor was wearing a mask. And I thought, okay, this is a good thing. And, more and more conversations I'm having casually, more and more people are, as soon as I talk about it's a hoax and so forth or a fraud, they'll nod their heads, or in many cases they'll say, yeah, I know. So there's that glimmer of hope anyway.
There is a glimmer of hope, but we don't have a lot of time. But what we have on side is the internet, but we don't control it. And so, you know, that again, they have to trip a switch or an EMP. And that's my concern about cyber currencies, because it is all electronic. I mean, I totally recognize how it works and all of that. However, I would be taking your suggestions, indeed, about investing hard currency into actual precious metals, silver and gold. Silver, I think, is likely by far the better choice, because the margins in silver are greater altogether, it being the most important industrial metal on the planet, and indeed an incredible antibacterial agent, and all of it. But yeah, we've got some serious trouble brewing, but I don't think it's insurmountable if we seriously towards organizing ourselves as a group into considering that hunting now is the only option. So we can pussyfoot around this in a war. But again, that's the problem, is that everybody believes that here we are in the 21st century. Well, not everybody, we don't, but you know, well, most people say here we are in this advanced civilization. You know, we have these little communication wafers that we can carry in our hand and communicate with the world, and it's all there in the air, and electromagnetic soup that's eating up our brains and killing cells. But it's aptly named technology. It's a cell phone, you know, a cell. You're in a cell. Right. You're like in a jail. And I don't have one. I don't use one. I had many years ago, like some of you have identified. You're the same. But once you recognize what, in fact, that is, I mean, do you really need to have, you know, Captain Kirk's little communication wafer? Indeed, they modeled the early cell phones on Kirk's little flip open phone unit. You know, I mean,
quickly, if I could, Gershon. Although the cell phone conversation is interesting, but I don't think that's a battle we're gonna be involved in or win. But
I agree.
About the comments on silver and hard metals, it brings to mind an interesting book I have, and I was recently rereading. It's called The Coming Battle. Published in 1898 originally by a person by the name of Walpert. Anyway, in that, it really talks a lot about the tremendous, you know, political and, you know, what we call intrigue that went on with the free coinage of silver, because there was a large movement in this country in the 1800s to allow for what they called more or free coinage of silver. Silver, of course, being much more abundant, because there was people that knew back then that an abundant money supply was the key to prosperity, and that there was the forces, the powers that be, that wanted to squash silver in favor of gold, which just reminds me of what some of the remarks were earlier about the gold standard and the way that that Hitler and the National Socialists viewed gold. There's some very revealing quotes. There's a great book I would recommend to anybody. It's called Uncovering the Forces for War by Conrad Grebe, 1947. And in there is some amazing insight into the money question. And essentially, the Germans came to the realization that the idea of the worth of a nation, or the ability of a nation to be a viable trading entity on the world stage tied to gold and silver in its possession, was nonsense. And what they basically discovered was that the productivity of the people, their inventiveness, their willingness to work, their labor, was the only thing that determined the prosperity of a nation. And in my opinion, that's one of the largest reasons Germany had to be crushed. So I wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah,
Paul, not to interrupt you, but you know, tying the value of money to labor, that is such a crucial, crucial point, because without labor, money doesn't mean anything.
Correct. Yes, absolutely. In other words, you drop a trainload full of gold onto your average African country, and come back in 100 and 200 years, what are you going to see? You know, it's obvious.
A lot of bling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Just real quick before we go to somebody else, I'm going to recommend another great book about World War II in case anybody has not read it or heard of it. It's called Bodyguard of Lies by Anthony Cave Brown. He was a British historian. And essentially the book details and goes into the breaking of the German code and how the British were reading the German wireless traffic throughout the war. And essentially, in my mind, among many other things, I think it makes the case that I don't think there's any way the Germans would have been defeated without that. The one thing of note, it's a great book. It's like 700-800 pages, and I've actually read it twice. I thought it was just absolutely fascinating.
Why
but
were they
Rommel,
those codes?
But
why?
Pardon me?
Yourself the question, why were the British able to break those codes? Why?
You'd have to read the book, but They built a machine at Bletchley Park. It was the most massive electronic computer of its time, and that's one of the reasons. The other, of course, is that they actually
That is not why. The British were able to break those codes was, one, chair of mathematics at Cambridge, and two, it probably had a Rothschild man down in Berkeley. Those were the two leading centers of mathematics on the planet. That's why. And the Jews were probably collaborating on the mathematics amongst each other. The monarchy has a traditional German heritage here because they're both Ashkenazi and Yiddish.
Yep.
So amongst that subculture and that sub-language that they use amongst each other, they were probably exchanging said codes to that. So the codes that the Enigma machine was based on were mathematical. And I think we have to look at the way British empiricism dominates the study of mathematics and its constantly evolving technology of encryption. I think back then is that they were infiltrated from within through the maths as well as from within through spies and compromisation of said mathematicians who were developing the algorithm for that Enigma machine to start with.
Right. Well, just not to take away from what you said, it's an interesting side story, but it's not quite the point that I was making. I understand why you said what you said. Also, too, it was rumored that an Enigma machine was smuggled out from a factory in Poland and made its way to England. The Germans did change their ciphers fairly regularly, but the bottom line was with this machine, they were continually able to break them down. But what I was quickly going to say in conclusion was, for example, the North African campaign was dependent upon supply ships to deliver fuel and ammunition and food to Rommel. And basically the Germans sank every single ship except one that sailed across the Mediterranean. Most of the time, Rommel was scavenging gasoline from the British and other forces that he captured. So there's just a lot that went on in that war, unfortunately, that didn't go well for the Germans.
Yeah, Paul, you know, you brought up some great books and some great points. I'd really like to have you come on for like a whole hour maybe next week if you're up for it, man, so we can really get into the mind of Paul a little bit deeper. If you're up for that.
Sure, that's definitely a possibility. Thanks for that.
Right on. Okay, well, look, we're down to the last few minutes, so I want to give everybody a chance to say some final thoughts before we finish up on the air here. Maybe, Paul, why don't you go first, and then we'll take Gertchen and Steve, and then we'll let the other panelists jump in. So, Paul, go ahead.
Okay, so quickly, among the many things you guys talked about, I would just continually to harp upon the number one issue, of course, which is money. And at the beginning of the show, it was mentioned how Myanmar received a $350 million loan from the IMF or something like that. And, of course, I'm going to remind everybody who understands this issue that they were loaned nothing and that the IMF gave up nothing except credit. A number of years ago, I cut an article out. I think it was probably back in the 90s, and it was one of these Central or South American countries that was undergoing IMF austerity measures, and there were riots, and hundreds of people were killed. And at the time, I pointed out to people that these austerity conditions were imposed because this country was not able to, quote, pay back its debt on schedule. And what did they receive? Did they receive shipments, bales of currency from the IMF? No. Did they receive gold or silver from the IMF? No. How about, for example, machine tools and equipment and other things of value? No. The IMF only gave them credit. So the Jews have essentially perfected. They've actually destroyed this notion that there's no such thing as a free lunch. The Jews get free lunch, free dinner, free breakfast. They own your home, they own your car and everything else, and they have to be crushed. So that's the starting point that you ask about, Dave. The starting point has got to start with a few dead bodies here and there. Thanks for hearing that.
Oh, you know, you're so on my wavelength. I've been advocating that for many years already in episode 11 of one of my my Two Bits Worth TV. Episode 11, I show people how to make a noose. That's what has to happen. It's trust me, I was a high-level Boy Scout, so I'm an authority on knots, and I point that out to people, but I show how to make a noose because they need to be running so afraid that they are constantly looking over their shoulders. Their temples need to be disappeared at this time. We are at war, and we need to be way stronger and overt about this because just talking about it, I mean, you know, talk, it's just talk. But this has been great talk. You guys, I really appreciate being included in this conversation. It's just really great to be amongst people that I consider like-minded brothers in arms. So I hope that we can do this again sometime.
Oh, absolutely. This is the first of many, Gertchen. You're a big hit here with the chat. And if Paul gives you the seal of approval, then that's good enough for me.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Paul.
And Steve, thank you. Want to put some final thoughts, man?
Yeah. Okay. I think I know what I want to do. I think check your maths and your encryption. Okay, so we've got a lot of hard work ahead of us. Hard work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So let's get our encryption going. Let's make sure government proof. Let's go over these issues. Use IPFS links. Want to have a shout out to all those who've gone before us. Remember them. I want to have a shout out to all those in prison and aware of us. We're aware of you. And I want to leave people with three things. Empowering each other with, you know, what we're empowering each other with, number two, to consider that, don't just blindly empower it. What is it, the intention behind it? And thirdly, that any victory we have is God's victory. They are false gods, foreign gods. And if you get rid of those foreign god possessions, you're on reasonably good ground. That our victory is God's. But we got the hard work to put in. Be no fool.
Yeah, okay? Yeah. Because we're in a
bad heroes situation.
Out. We're in a so bad
don't
situation.
Don't make fools
now.
Out of heroes.
Yeah, and there's a lot of hard work ahead. I totally agree. Chris, let's hear your final thoughts, sir.
Well, another great show there, Dave. I won't keep up too much. I'll let you wrap it up. I know you're running short on time, but maybe tune in tonight if anybody wants to talk a little bit more. 6 to 8 on Revolution Radio on Studio B. So. Shameless plug there. Have a great day, everyone.
Great. Giuseppe, final thoughts, sir.
Well, got a message from fellow host Chicago Brew. He says, please tell Paul I've seen what he looks like, and please, Paul, wear a mask for the greater good.
Oh, ow. Oh
no! I'd be willing to bet that Paul is a handsome white
he
man.
He is there. Chicago Brew is just teasing him because they're buddies. But what a fantastic show, Scorpio! And we just have to continue to hammer at the delusion and the hypnotic entrainment from the international Jew, the vile Satanists. And I agree with everything. They need to be taken off the chessboard. Their time is done.
Yeah, and these oligarchs and billionaires should be afraid to walk down the street. That's the reality that we need to start creating too, because they've stolen so much wealth from people, and by creating inflation, printing up funny money, et cetera, et cetera. And just very briefly, I just want to remind everyone listening that Revolution Radio is 100% listener funded. So come aboard and become a Patreon member. Come on, revolution.radio or freedomslips.com. Become a Patreon member, or maybe buy something in the store, or scroll down to the bottom of the page. There's an address where you can mail in donations as well. So do what you can to keep this bastion of free speech going. We are in a digital holocaust and a cost. well. So.